podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, coolies. Welcome to Barca Talk. I'm your host, Gabriel Quiroga, here in the Spanish capital. In today's episode, of course, we're going to do a resumen of the Clásico last night that happened. And to talk with me is Troy Cadet, and we'll get into that after this quick break from NordVPN. Are you tired of hackers and cyber criminals snooping around your online activities? Do you want to safely access your favorite shows and content from anywhere in the world? Then you need NordVPN, the best VPN on the market. And the good news is that there's an exclusive birthday deal just for you. Buy NordVPN now and win extra subscription time. With NordVPN, you can protect your online activity and keep your private information away from prying eyes. And if you're traveling abroad, don't worry. Connect to a NordVPN server in your home country and safely enjoy content as if you never left. So what are you waiting for? Visit nordvpn.com/Barca now to get this special birthday deal. Shield your data from snoops and criminals with NordVPN's state-of-the-art encryption. Safely listen to podcasts, stream shows, or simply browse in complete privacy. Again, visit nordvpn.com/Barca. The link is in the show notes. Get NordVPN now and enjoy a safe and private online experience. All right, last night, Barcelona beat Madrid in the first leg of the Copa del Rey semifinal, 1-0. And I am deeming, and I was bouncing this idea around with some other coolies like Diana Christine and some other people, was this the most impressive Clásico victory in the last 20 years? I'm in the camp of yes, just because of the top four players on Barca being absent and also what this kind of meant momentum-wise. What do you think, Troy? Do you think this was the most impressive Clásico victory for Barcelona in the last 20 years?
So I have to say no on the fact of like the 5-0 game. You know, okay, we beat them 4-0, you know, last year when we had Aubameyang. So those types of games. But if you want to look at it from a perspective of grit and sheer determination, then I would put this definitely at the top of the list. Like, I mean, we fought the whole entire game, fought the whole, you know, 95 plus minutes, however many minutes there were. So when you're looking from that perspective, when you thought that, you know, there was no way in hell that Barca was going to come in here and win it, then from that perspective, yes. But I don't know how it competes with games where we walk in their building and beat them 4-0 or 5-0 like that.
I get that. But again, I feel with those victories, we had superstars, you know, and in last night's match, you know, we talked about this on Wednesday. I was going into the match expecting to lose more than any other Clásico I can remember, just because of the amount of injuries that we had on the team. And also not knowing if Xavi was going to adjust accordingly. And he did last night. And that's going to lead me to my next segment or my next question is like, why, you know, if he's so willing to do it against Madrid, why couldn't we do it against Manchester United if we are ultimately trying to win everything we can? Because I feel that last night's performance gave me a glimpse of what was possible at, you know, Manchester to pull out something defensively. Because I'm sorry to say, Troy, Koundé and Araujo are becoming world-class, like top-of-the-line defenders that we are seeing maybe in the last 15 years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've thought about that, about Araujo for a while now, like the past, you know, couple of years, just because how big and physical he is, how fast he is, and his mentality of he'll do whatever it takes to help Barcelona win. So, I mean, obviously, growing up watching sports, he's the type of player that you just, you know, fall in love with, like, right away. Like, he's your guy. He, you know, I've already been talking about him becoming our captain, you know, for the next 10 years or whatever. So, and then Koundé's always been pretty stout. Obviously, we've asked him to play out of position for most of the year as a right back. He's transitioned pretty well to that. He came back into his, you know, his natural center back position. Against Man U, he at times did not play that well. You know, he was struggling with their pace and struggling with, you know, sometimes getting rid of the ball and got caught on a couple of the times he had the ball. But overall that back line is just, you know, even they're just so much more improved than, you know, what they've been in, I guess, again, that little period of time, that, you know, 3 to 5 year period. And they were so well last night, they even were able to cover up, or, you know, for Marcus Alonso being put in there as the other center back, but he actually even had a pretty decent game too. I mean, it looked like to me, he was hustling a lot more than I've ever seen him hustle when he's been at Barca. So,
back to Alonso really quick, I think, you know, as we talked about on Wednesday, having the speed of the three guys, right? Balde, Koundé, and Araujo makes Alonso not a liability on the speed aspect, right? And I think that's where Christensen also benefits a lot. Now, really quick, just on Araujo's numbers at the Bernabeu in his career, essentially 2 matches, 2 wins, 1 goal scored, 0 goals conceded. I mean, I just cannot believe how he just has a personal vendetta against Vinicius. I'm all for it, obviously, because Vinicius just drives me crazy about, you know, I love a good Brazilian player, striker. You know, I love him. I mean, that's what I grew up on. But the way that his attitude and the way he feints these injuries and these things, it's just like too much for me. And there's not enough goal or spectacular plays for me to be on the Vinicius train, you know, so to speak, as a world football fan. But again, when I'm watching I watched the highlights again today and the news. And one of the things that stood out to me with Araujo being on the right side is that he is so like just honed in on Vinicius' belly button. And what I mean by that is, I remember growing up when I was playing American football, it's like you hone in on the belly button because that's where the movement of the left to the right of the hips go, right? And when you watch Araujo, I mean, watch it again. If you watch these highlights, watch how he gets low and he just is so ready to adjust which way he has to go. But also he's not falling for the minuscule moves because also Vinicius knows that he can't beat Araujo to the corner. And once you take that away, I think Vinicius becomes one-sided. And you saw last night, another crazy stat is that Madrid had, you know, 13 shots, but 0 on goal. So again, Koundé and Araujo, especially on that right side with Vinicius and Benzema, they did a spectacular job last night.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's bigger, just as fast, if not faster than Vinicius. And you're right, he doesn't fall for. So I mean, you know, like I said, I thought he's early in the year. I thought before he even got hurt, I thought he was top 5 center back in the world. I think you take him up to top 3, if not top 2, active, you know, in their form right now. Like he is just pure beast for our squad.
I mean, how many defensive backs are playing world class right back and the world class center back? I mean, that is an impossible. Like that's not a many, really hard thing to do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, how lucky are we, you know, to have, you know, somebody presented him to us and we actually said yes. If you look back at all the players that good old Barto said no to, they just, you know, for him, it was him and Pedri that were presented and Bartomeu and his crony said yes. So thankfully they did, because what a player we have. And hopefully Barca can lock him down for, you know, the majority of his career. I mean, the guy's got 10 years, you know, to play for us. And I can't wait to watch him do his thing for the next 10 years.
I mean, last night was one of the best defensive performances I've seen from a Barca back line, I think, in my lifetime from front to back, especially because we lost the possession game. And we knew going into this that it was going to be a dogfight from the beginning. Normally, when you go into a Clásico, you know, I was trying to think because like I was talking to Diana Christina, and she was telling me, you know, the one where Messi wasn't there. And I'm like, yeah, but we still had Iniesta, Neymar, you know, we still had like a lot of fight to that. Whereas last night, you know, we had Rafinha up top with Ferran Torres, and we saw, you know, that they were basically on islands last night. The midfield was just basically trying to hold water and clear everything. And then our back line was under barrage, where most of the play was in our end. And again, Ter Stegen did an outstanding job when he had to make a couple of those plays just to, like, especially on a cross here and a cross there, he was outstanding. Of course, Balde, what can you say about him? I mean, last night, I think maybe one last night he had one errant pass that almost got into some trouble. But other than that, he was lights out for me. And again, like you said, when all these three players are playing, I basically feel like you could put Alonso Christensen and not really skip a beat. Obviously, I would prefer Christensen. I think you know, obviously he's younger, has more more life to him on defense. But again, you, like you said, Alonso had one of his best matches. I mean, how many times did he come in at the last minute to either head something away or put a foot into a pass? And I think, you know, Troy, it's kind of like one of those things when you are playing with someone alongside that is just ultimately so fast, it is so freeing for you because you don't have to worry about that. You know,
yeah.
It's not like you're playing with someone slow where you're like, oh God, who's going to run back? You know, it's like, Koundé is going to cover everything. And so is Balde to your left. So that gives you like this ability, this confidence that you play. But I just can't say enough of this back line last night. I was watching it just like with bated breath because you knew Madrid was going to cross and throw everything but the kitchen sink.
Yeah. Yeah. Balde too. Like, I mean, I've been talking about him for a while. You know, here's this kid that, you know, played for Barca, you know, obviously came up through the system. He's been with us since he's been like 8 years old. And the problem is like these players come up through La Masia, they make it to Barca B. And those games are so, those games are like clusters. Like, you know, they're going at each other. I'm talking about Barca B games. Like, they're physical. They're, you know, it's not the best players. Our players are normally younger, where the other teams that they're playing are usually older. They're a little bit smarter, a little bit wiser, a little bit dirtier. And so you kind of neutralize the ability to see their talent. So even on him, there were questions of at one point in time, like 2.5 years ago, you know, do we just get rid of him because they don't know if he could make it. And then once he got on the first team and got some field time and you saw this kid, like just, I mean, he's got blazing fast speed. He has, he's got a pair on him because he's not afraid at times. I want him to do it more, but he's not afraid at times to take that edge, to take that corner, bring it to the box. He didn't do it too much last night because I think that the game plan was he needed to play safer and be able to fall back when needed. But other times you've seen him, he'll take that corner. He'll take a person one-on-one and get by him and take that corner and do some crosses. But his abilities then to track back are like second to none on this. He's by far faster than anybody else on this team. Like there's no doubt about it. If you line him up, he would certainly win. And he's not afraid. He's just a kid and he's not afraid. So just like Araujo, we need to lock him down and have him control that left back spot for at least the next 10 years, because he already understands our style, right? He understands that, and he just needed the green light to get on the field and do his thing. And I know Xavi's been, you know, building the trust with him. As you know, we obviously have Alba that's still available, but the biggest thing is he must be on the field if you're going to play a Marcus Alonso next to him, because he counteracts his slowness with his pace and the ability to cover you know ground and cover you know box to box, so to speak, on the defensive side. He, like you said, having Balde on one side of Alonso and having Koundé on the other side, really, you know, they cover his weakness, and that's being slow, and allow him to actually look pretty good and be the smarter defender of them, right? Like position himself in the right spot at the right time, because he was pretty crucial on some of those defensive times where there was like a free kick or whatever was going on, where he was just always seemed like that second half, he was always in the right spot at the right time. And he didn't get nervous if the ball bounced to him. He knew, he knew what to do with it. So, and they have the biggest thing for me about that back line is this is absolutely what Barca has to have the foundation for success in Europe. We can't, you know, we need, it's a, you have to have a defense today. Like you're not going to be able to win it with MSN. Even if we had prime MSN, in the way that today is played, you know, those three would still be run on, right? And they didn't like to play defense. So it'd be like 7-10 on the field defensively. And I think Barca would still suffer. And you saw that in Champions League knockouts, you know, when we still had those guys that we were still losing. I mean, they were, you know, technically in their prime still. So you have to have that defense. And luckily, like I said, we different reasons where these guys came from. One's a signing. One we found as he was older. One came up through our platform or through La Masia. We have more that are back in the system that are ready to, you know, take the big step when they're given the green light. So We're pretty good. We're pretty, although we need a right back. I think we need a pure right back.
Yeah.
I do like Koundé out there, but I know that's not his preferred.
Sure.
So we've got to find a right back.
I'm going to push back on this a little bit because I don't know if it's that crucial anymore because we have Balde. You know, I think finding Balde on the left now gives that flexibility on the right that we can get away with it, right? I mean,
yeah.
Of course, who doesn't want that world-class and amazing right back? I mean, of course, everyone does. But yeah. I think we're in a position now that we are so solid on the left back. I mean, that is like a no-brainer now with Balde there that with the type of matches now, if you want to mix up Koundé and Araujo, they're both comfortable on the right. You can do that. Now teams going forward don't know who's going to be defending right at the onset. And also, if we keep Alonso, obviously we have Alonso for another season and Christensen, I'm okay with that defensively, you know, because we still have the speed. As long as, you know, we're healthy there, we're going to be there. Let's move on to the next line because I want to talk about the midfield a little bit. I want to highlight a couple players here. So the first thing is obviously Busquets making history last night with his 46th appearance in the Clásico. He is now the leader in Clásico appearances over Messi and Ramos. But what can you say about De Jong last night? De Jong was a man running around, and it's not about the speed, you know? It's about the coverage and, like, the strides that he has. On the last minute of the match, he runs down, hustles. I think it was on Vinicius, and he just gets the ball and wins it. And I was like, good God. Like, this is the Frankie De Jong we've been waiting for the last 3 years, and here he is. And last night, when we needed it most, we needed someone to just make those crucial toe pokes, those crucial tackles, those crucial moments to receive the ball. De Jong was there. And De Jong, again, last night, I have in my notes, was just – for me, top-notch, spectacular, world-class.
One of the best games I've ever seen him play, by far. And going back to the Man U games, Xavi put him on the left. The right is clearly his preferred side. The right and with freedom. So that's why I didn't understand why, with all the things that Xavi was doing with his lineup, why didn't he have Kessié play on the left side to help them with the defense? Because that was our weak side, was the left side, and then allow Frankie to be on the right side so he could do his thing. Because you saw last night, if he can be on the right side and he has the freedom of movement, you can see what he can do. And that's prime Frankie's position right there, being on the right side and having the freedom. But yeah, I mean, for me, I mean, you got the defense, obviously you got Araujo, that would be, you know, man of the match, you know, top voter maybe, but Frankie has to be right there as well because he was doing everything. He was doing everything defensively, offensively, you know, just fantastic movement on the ball, just transition, just moving it side to side. Just, I mean, he did it all. He did every single thing and he did it really well. I don't remember any plays in the back of my mind that I was like, man, what are you doing there? Like, I mean, he did everything right last night. So it's super important player for us. And, we need to ensure that he can be in that spot on the field so he can do his thing. Because I think we've seen historically with him, if you pull him out, like I said, even just putting him on the left-hand side, you're restricting him big time. You're really restricting him and you see what you get. Like he didn't play that great against Man U because he had other priorities. So it didn't allow him to shine with what he naturally does. But, fantastic game.
You know, I love French midfielders. So I love Camavinga's motor. I think he's like a version 2.0 of Conte. But man, when Frankie De Jong, you know, a lot of times he was 2v1 on these players and he was able to pick the right spots, when to lunge, when to go back. I mean, he was spectacular last night. And, you know, even though his drives didn't lead to direct goals or direct attacks, it was like the workman rate that he was able to just cover and almost feel like a 2-for-1 midfielder in the midfield. And this goes to my next player that I want to highlight is Frank Kessié, because he's not the most spectacular midfielder we've ever seen, but we know what he is. Like, I know what he is as a player. He's fundamentally sound, physical, and he's going to run. great, I'm on. Like, I know what you're going to do. Let's do it, you know? And as you can see with every match that he is playing, he's adapting more and more to his passing style with the shorter passes and finding those lanes. But last night, too, I feel like it was one of his best matches in the Barca jersey. Because, like, last night, when he was with the – obviously, he had the goal with the own goal of that play. Okay, that's fine. But he was the one that was there to pounce on that mistake from Camavinga, right? And now when you're watching him, I don't feel like before I was like, oh, God, we're going to have a little bit of a bajon of like a player. He's fine. Like to me, if I see him in the starting lineup, I'm okay with that because I know what he's going to get, and that's fine. We need players like that that are physical. But again, he just has to watch his temper a little bit. But other than that, I think it was one of his best matches in a Barca uniform last night.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, obviously the jury's been out on him, but how many times have we seen when a player comes into Barcelona and they just struggle, right? I mean, he obviously had language barriers, and this is not a type of style that he's ever played before, obviously. So he's had to grow into playing with us. And, you know, fortunately for us, due to injuries or whatever, he's probably getting more playing time than he would have normally, like, you know, with Gavi missing games and obviously Pedri being out. So, but that's it. That's made him grow into this team much quicker than he was in the beginning of the year when he first got here. So fantastic for him. Should have had two goals. Ansu the blocker played defense. Guess he was not too happy about that. He was just like, you could see him. He's like telling Ansu to jump. And that's,
I mean, can you imagine that really quick? Like if Kessié scored, like, you know, involved and scored two goals in this match last night, you couldn't have paid me enough money to even put that on the top 10 things that were going to happen last night.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I mean, you know, in our chat, he's been one of those players like, okay, that was a bad signing. Obviously we didn't pay any money for him. So thankfully for that, but up to date, you know, up to like, you know, New Year, Christmas time, you know, he was a really bad signing. You know, then we heard, you know, Inter was, you know, interested in bringing him back, or some other Italian, you know, clubs were interested in bringing him back. And I think everybody at that time would vote, like, get rid of him. But look how important he is now. Like, that was and I like his nastiness, if you ask me. I like it a little bit because that's always been something. Barcelona's always been soft. They really have. I mean, Puyol brought some of that nastiness, but overall, Barcelona has always been a softer team or a finesse, you know, type of team. So I like it. And he certainly stepped up big time yesterday. I mean, he was, again, you know, Frankie on one side, him on the other side, being physical, you know, intensity, the whole entire game, running. You know, he was really, I mean, those two in the middle were fantastic. Busquets did not have that great a game. He had a lot of missed, but he was bad passes. Good enough.
I feel like he was like kind of like a non-factor in that. Like he didn't F us up and he didn't do anything spectacular. Right. He was just there as a guy. And fine. Let's move on to the last line. And I think this was one of the troubling issues. I was getting a lot of texts from Craig, in fact. And also we saw in our group chat about this. But, you know, we're going to get into the Xavi thing as the last thing, because I think we definitely need to dissect and obviously give him kudos for what he did last night. But, you know, understanding the assignment, right? And I feel Rafinha last night was like not on the same page of what was tactically happening in the match, right? I feel he made every bad decision possible. Like when he was supposed to go, he stopped. When he was supposed to stop, he went, you know, and he could not get anything. And this was the type of match that reminded me of, you know, when I was growing up as a striker, you're only going to get three touches in a match. What are you going to do with those three touches, right? You're only going to get three to four. So you're going to have to really be smart about understanding where the defense is in the moment. And that it's really difficult. Don't get me wrong. It's like, it's way better when you have seven touches because you're in the rhythm of the game. But I mean, there was, you know, especially in the second half last night where Rafinha just needed to hold the ball, wait a little bit. And no, he tried to take people on with speed, and he's not that much faster than everyone where you're like, yeah, go for the speed like Dembele. And again, last night, I just was very frustrated because I wanted more from these two players, Ferran and Rafinha. Sure, Ferran was okay. I mean, he had some good dribbles, but man, I just I just don't get it sometimes, Troy, about like just know the moment, use your back, be physical, hold the ball, wait for the counter. Like it's just football 101.
Yeah. Okay, on Rafinha. So I've been a fan of his. Like I've talked about a lot in our group chat. And I had said before that Xavi created a monster with this Dembele, Rafinha, you know, versus each other type of thing, where he's always, before Dembele got hurt, he's always talking about, you know, how much of a game changer he is, how much better, you know, he could be the best, you know, right winger in the game and all this type of thing. And here you got another guy that we just signed for, you know, 65 million, 60 million, whatever it was. And of course, now what's happening is this guy, as soon as he gets on the field, wants to make an impact too. So you have that classic case of somebody coming in and trying to do too much, trying to prove, you know, that they're better or whatever. And I blamed Xavi for setting it up, that he was creating this monster. So some of that I think is still like he wants to be that flashy, that spectacular, you know, do something, you know, meg somebody, you know, take somebody on one-on-one and do a typical Brazilian-esque, Neymar-esque type of move and do whatever. I think he just needs to just relax a little bit, settle down and be smarter. But I don't know when that's going to happen because he's trying to optimize his chances right now because Dembele's hurt. So I feel bad for him. I really do. Sometimes, but you're right, he does some bonehead things. Like you're like, dude, all you had to do was like, you know, go to your right and push the ball up into the box. Like we don't, you know, you don't need to do that or, you know, whatever type of play he's doing. Sometimes he is really reckless with the ball and sometimes his passes are really reckless and you're just wondering, you know, what was he thinking? So, but on the good side for him, the dude will track back as much as he possibly can. Like, and he did it last night. He constantly tracked back on the defensive side. Where like if we had a Dembele in there, there's been minimal times that he's willing to track back like that and actually get up in somebody's space to try to steal the ball or anything like that or make any physical contact. So I kind of give him a pass somewhat on that. Now, if we would have had lost and he had been doing those bonehead moves, it would have been very easy to Monday morning quarterback it and, you know, put some blame on him. Luckily, we didn't lose, but big picture with him, he needs to realize like, hey, I need to be smarter with what I'm doing and not worry about being flashy. But like I said, he's a typical Brazilian, you know, offensive player. And it takes a while, if ever, to like get that out of them. You know what I mean? To like get their mind to think like, hey, let's do it the right way and not worry about the flash on every single time he touches the ball.
Exactly. I mean, there was just the one play where, you know, all he had to do was get the shot off, right? Just get the shot off. There was a guy trailing him, but no, he like cuts it back. And it's like, sometimes you just need to go up the middle and just shoot the ball, like shoot the glass, right?
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into the most confusing, complex topic of Xavi, right? Because again, this has dominated our What's Up chat. This also got a lot of comments in our Patreon post. I've seen it all over today. It's what do we think about this now? Like we just got eliminated literally last week from Europa League. And here we are beating Madrid in Madrid with, like I said, one of the most impressive victories that I've seen in the last 20 years of just the grit and the gut of this team. Yeah. And that Xavi, I remember like, you know, obviously the tactical strategy last night was just to hold the fort and move on. And to me, I'm just like, what? You're telling me we couldn't have done this against Manchester? I'm not saying we got the result, but at least I would have been more prepared. Like, okay, we tried different things and this is what it is. But let me just start off with this because we just have comments galore. So let me just start off with the first one from Carlos. Obviously, Carlos is one of our most active participants in our WhatsApp group. He says, what do we make of Xavi's success in Clásicos versus his record in Europe? So let's go with that first one, because I think that is an amazing question for us to start off with this philosophical topic, because, you know, and we've been discussing this in the last weeks and so forth. I mean, Xavi's now 4 for 5 in Clásicos. I mean, this is pretty incredible stuff.
It is confusing. I was going to say it's hard to pinpoint, but then it's not like hard to pinpoint. Like, you can see the difference in the team's reactions and mentality when they're playing Madrid versus other things. And I think that they tried to beat Man U, but Xavi kind of, you know, put an arm behind their back, especially with the lineup when the first leg in Barcelona with what he did. Like, I think if he didn't do that, we're probably talking about our next opponent in Europa League. Honestly, I think that we probably could have won that game like 3-1, and we would have won on aggregate anyway. I don't understand. That's why I have said many times, like, if he really didn't care about it, then be really blatant about it, you know, and put more of those bench players out on the field and be really obvious. Like, I don't give a shit about this Europa League. Like, I'm putting Torre out there. I'm putting Arakan out there. I'm putting, you know, these players that aren't getting any minutes, you know, I'd put them out there and make it a bold statement. Like, we don't care about this. Man, you go for it. It's all yours. Take it. We're just going to play the games because we're going to play the games. But it was just like, well, I'm going to put my team out there with like 80% strength or 75% strength and then hope for the best. And then the second leg, Man U did the same exact tactics. Like I said, it would almost mimic the first game. We just couldn't come back and put that second goal in. So they won the game. It was the pattern was almost exactly the same. So it's like, we're sitting here blaming him. I'm blaming him. I was blaming him. I said, I don't think he has the ability to do tactical changes and understand what's going on in the field and counteract that. And then we have a match like this where, you know, we shut Madrid down, even though I still think, man, I put in the WhatsApp group, like they moved Vinny over to the right side. They were overloading with Benzema, and we still had Araujo on our right side. And so Araujo is out here guarding grass, and they're overloading the side, and we still don't make a change. Like, I was like, okay, let's pull Araujo in. Like, you know, they're not doing anything over there. They're trying to, you know, late in that game, trying to overload. So we still didn't make any changes there. So I don't know. It's like, it could just be straight down to mentality still. Like,
yeah.
Okay, this is Madrid, but Europe, man, like, I don't care if it's Europa League. I don't care if it's the Champions League. I've said it before, and I'll say it till I'm dead in the face. Like, let's win the freaking game. Like, I don't care if we've never won the trophy and it's a second tier contest. Let's go win it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand it.
I mean, last night, again, just confused me more because, you know, this is the type of performance that we've been begging for home and away type of matches, especially when we are, you know, undermatched like this, right? Like, and it doesn't happen very often, right? It does not happen very often. But it's also about the mentality. You could just tell the mentality last night was we need to play really sound defense and we need to scratch our way some way to get a point here, to you know, not lose it in the first leg. And I feel like that's, I think, for me, one of the most frustrating thing. And the other thing too, that what's coming across social media, what's up, and obviously I'm going to read this comment from Jay Cruzen, is this idea that it wasn't the prettiest match. Now, Jay Cruzen here said, not the best victory, but best defensive display I can remember in the past few years. You know, before this match, all you heard was Vinny, world-class, in form. You know, hopefully Xavi will learn defense needs balance. And obviously I responded to someone else on Twitter as well saying this wasn't the most eye-pleasing match that they've ever seen, obviously.
Amazing.
But the thing is, you know, this is the thing. I am so over the moon about this victory, and I don't even care that we lost possession. Like, it's just this one match, right? Because it's a tournament, right?
Yeah.
If it's La Liga, maybe I would care a little bit more that we want to use our style, but last night was one of the best. Like, I can't remember a match where I was so involved in a way that I was holding my breath every time, because every time a cross came in, I was like, oh God, just clear it, just get it, you know? And it was just like watching the clock and just trying to survive. And I was all in. And I'm like, if we get past this with this Copa del Rey final, and if we do eventually win the Copa del Rey, I think it's, you know, a feather in his hat for Xavi. And, you know, I'll be even more favor in the Xavi United, because now I know that he's willing to change for certain tournaments, right? I mean, and that's what we're looking for.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We had like only 40% possession yesterday. So I wonder if anybody's gone back and looked at when was the last time that we even won a game and we didn't hold the edge in possession. Like, I don't know. I'll have to look and see if anybody even holds that stat or can even tell me, but it's been a long time. So that was the real interesting thing to me of how disciplined that team was, is that we didn't have possession. Madrid had possession, the majority of the possession that game, and we still were very disciplined. We didn't get scared. We didn't panic. You know, we just held and continued to do what we needed to do. But in those Man U games, we panicked. You could tell they went up 2-1 and we panicked. So it's like, what? Why did we panic there, but we don't panic against Madrid, you know, in this game here? So it's like, I don't know. And again, it's one of those things, like, I'm not, until we get to the Champions League and next year and we really see what we, you know, where this squad is at, I'm not going to judge Xavi by Europa League things. Of course, I'm a fan and I want them to win every single game. And one of the teams that I just can't stand anyway is Man U. So I can't stand their fan base. So I'm like, you know, seeing all of them, you know, talk on Twitter after was just,
of course,
made me want to vomit. So that's why I really, you know, wanted to really beat them. But so we'll see. Anyways, overall, the team, I mean, like I said, what they showed yesterday defensively to me was super impressive. And the fact that they can do it, that they're understanding the tactics and can do it. But my last thing is, when is this fan base, when are the socials, when are the members, when are they going to realize that we cannot win every single game with style?
Correct.
Like,
correct.
I don't want to hear it anymore.
I don't want to hear it. That's the thing. It reminds me of really quick of basketball. You know, like, I remember in the early days, my Warriors with Run TMC, and Don Nelson was like, you know what we're going to do? We're really short, but we're just going to run out everyone, right? And that worked really well in the regular season. But then guess what? In the playoffs, it's a slow down pace. Yep. You know, you're playing the same team four times, and we never got past the second round, right? Yeah. And then fast forward to my new Warriors now. Same thing throughout the season, very entertaining, playing fast. But guess what? During the playoffs, they were able to redefine their offense for specific moments to get victories, right? And that's really what it's about, right? I feel like, you know, as we always talk about the style, that's our DNA, that's the base we're doing. But there has to be times that you deviate from that just to get the victory, because ultimately that is the most important thing that we want to get, is those victories, right?
Yeah.
And so again, we still have a tough road ahead. Obviously, I'm going to be heading to Barcelona tomorrow. I'm really excited. I'm going to be meeting up with the North American Peña Tour, led by Victor, one of our main cohorts in the Patreon group. So I'm headed there tomorrow. We're going to go to the Femini match on Sunday afternoon, and then we'll go to the men's match against Valencia. So it's going to be a doubleheader, 180 minutes of football for this man here. Nice. And then after that, we have Athletic Club the following week, and then the Clásico on March 19th. So two tough matches. I think Valencia, you know, especially with what they're going through right now, they're still in dissension right now. So we'll see what's going to happen. Hopefully Barcelona can take advantage. Again, the only thing that worries me, Troy, is the time. It's a 4:15 kickoff, you know, especially coming off the high of this Thursday night match, right? And then just going into a siesta match against Valencia, you know, it has, I mean, this is, you know, Xavi needs to get these boys geared up. It's basically probably going to be the same starting 11 in a way. And I just hope that we see some energy, you know, momentum coming from that Clásico. So we'll see how that works out. So I'll be headed to Barcelona. I'll be sending you pictures from the beach, Troy. So thanks for joining me again, as always, talking and dissecting a Clásico victory, which is always the best type of podcast episodes to do.
Enjoy Barcelona.
Podcast Network.